When you think about all those travels you've had right around the world, I mean, are there many differences that you see around the world when it comes to having those negotiations and the partnerships, or is it really just a human, an underlying human kind of way of exchange that sort of permeates through all those different things?
Oh, it's different. Yeah, it's really different because I've done business in New York, I've done business in Miami, I've done business in Denver, I've done business, and I've lived in these places, Florence, Italy, Hamburg, Germany, Tel Aviv, Israel for a really extended period of time. Haven't made it down under to your neck of the woods yet. But you guys are Brits anyway. I'm just antagonizing everybody now. You're part of the Commonwealth. It's okay. What's the phrase going around right now? The U.S. innovates, Europe regulates, and what's the third? I can't remember. But, you know, when I was in Germany, like, the way everybody thinks is so engineering mindset and so rigid, and it's like, you never walk into a shop and start negotiating the price. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Israel or anywhere in that region, it's like, you could walk into a shop in a mall, be like, I'm going to negotiate. And you're like, what? There's a price tag on it. You can't negotiate. It's in a store. It's something. It's not the market. You can negotiate. So them, like, also in the Middle East, especially in Israel, they're extraordinarily direct. And I've also done business in Saudi and Bahrain and the UAE. But they're a little bit. They're also very different in that sense. But in Tel Aviv, they'll say something straight to your face. And one to get a position, but they're also trying to be transparent of where they're at as well. Yeah. And I can't negotiate with Israelis. My business partner did. I like lost my mind. I'm like, you handle it. You're better at it. You'll be happy at the end of the day. I won't. So anyway,
it's interesting, right? Like what I've found in the US versus China versus other parts of Asia, India, that the time horizon that they're negotiating over is vastly different. You know, when we've done bigger deals out of Singapore or Malaysia, they're looking for a generation's time in terms of return. Like they want to make money now, right? Don't get me wrong. It's not that they're putting down the track of making the money back, but they think very differently about, you know, if I'm going to get in this deal, if we're really going to invest, and I mean really invest, then they're looking for something for their children. They're not looking for something in the next quarter, next financial year. It's pretty interesting.
That's beautiful. I to be transparent, I haven't done much in APAC. That's a big blind spot for me.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to get you down here. There's no problem about that.
Thanks.
Rob, there's a view that's emerged online around you being very focused on referral-based networking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, paying it forward, the trust that comes with that. Tell me more about that and why that's so important to you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously we've all heard this at this point, but your network is your net worth, right? And I truly believe that. And I spent a lot of time over the last 5-10 years really making sure I'm one of the richest people in the world in that sense, right? So referral marketing, man, it is tough though. I built the name for myself with it. I asked my friends for help and support. And you really find out really quickly who your friends and who your acquaintances are. Mm-hmm. And referral marketing, so there's a few different things, right? If you're asking your friends and your network for support and you're going to create a proper partnerships program, and it sounds like we're speaking to a lot of partnership professionals here, so I don't mean to speak in a 101 level, but the first thing we really need to look for is, well, what's in it for the other person, right? Is it to help Rob out? Okay, I've won a lot of goodwill. Like, people will help me out. But they're not going to be motivated. And the more successful they are, what's the best tack? Is it going to be an altruistic tack, or is it going to be some sort of like mutually beneficial tack, or I could then help and support you and I owe you one and I'm going to make some interest for you? Or is it, and you know what I'm capable of, or is it purely financial?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the more transparent we are with that, I think that's when it's successful. It's like transparent, great communication, and really just clear on what we want. I think a lot of times when I see it go sideways is I'm not very clear. I'm trying to manipulate somebody in not a necessarily malicious way, but I've retrospectively looked at it, things that when I do post-mortems is go, oh, I was actually manipulating that person. I wasn't intending to, but I wasn't clear that, no, I was going to do this for you, but I really wanted that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to right? So I was being sneaky. I was being a little nasty. And that's, it never passed the smell test. They'll never go. I can't tell you how many partnerships I've created. By the way, cut me off at any point. Partnerships that I've created that just didn't go anywhere. People are like, yep, sign on the dotted line. And they just fizzle, mm-hmm. right? But the most successful ones were transparent. There's goals, there's KPIs, we're checking in. And there is a motivational structure in place that they really want.
Yeah.
Right? Like the partnership I'm working. Yeah. So, yeah.
Hey, look, speaking my language, one of the things that we've found to be really helpful is if a deal doesn't come with a first win within the first 6 months, that's been really well thought through, that people can go, I'm really excited about that. In addition to everything you just mentioned, over 80% of those deals fail when compared to those that have the first win baked in.
Yeah, I would change that 6 months, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 6 days.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right? If like, yep. It's not like right there, 6 months. I mean, listen, enterprise, everything's different. The horizons are different, mm-hmm. the whole, right? But small, medium-sized business, and we're just, if it's not 6 days or 6 weeks, I think we're just going to get caught up in our own business. And if there's, unless we're working towards something and there's like connection every day, but like, or every week or every month to really reinforce that or something momentum wise driving.
Yeah.
It. But yeah,
I get that. I totally get that.
I mean, it's your fact, but yeah, I mean, 6 months, that sounds like a while, but I completely agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's really around enterprise. So it's one of those things where the cogs turn slower, but the sooner you can get that win out the door, right, the better it can be. Really good. Yeah.
And so if you could close it, I mean, 6 months to a closed deal, that's pretty quick in enterprise. But I'd imagine 6 months before you're like seeing some sort of real traction.
Yeah, correct.
But even so, if you're not seeing traction, I think like some sort of positive feedback within weeks along that value chain, I would even go further.
I like where you're going with that. Rob, you know, you've talked a lot, this idea of referral selling. I just want to double click on this for a minute, because obviously trust is pretty important here. You've built a massive network. It's mm-hmm. something that precedes you. When you think about most of your days, like how are you cultivating that? Like it's one thing for people to think, you know, I really want to build trusting relationships. Are there things that you do that you think are different to most others as you think about building trust?
Yeah, I stumbled into this and I got really lucky. And now it's kind of apparently my thing. But when I was younger, I've always cooked. My grandmother taught me, you're like, where is this conversation going? So my grandmother taught me how to cook at two. And I was making scrambled eggs like on a step stool, like with my grandma at two. And I was always cooking and helping out and the sous chef. And my grandfather was, you know, he wasn't Italian, but it was like the old Italian guy, like telling my grandmother how to cook more basil, more this, and you know, the backseat driver. they were a beautiful little couple, had a thing going on. So in any case, I always cooked for my friends in high school. And at some point I wanted to be, my dad's like, you do whatever you want. I'm like, I want to be a chef. He's like, F no, you're not being a chef. He's like, you could do everything right and still fail. And you're going to work 16 hours a day. That's the worst career path. So I was like, okay, I'm not gonna be a chef. I'll be an entrepreneur. And got a degree in business management. Anyway, flash forward, COVID, I was in Miami Beach. We didn't really have COVID. We had COVID for a few months. After that, it didn't exist for us. We were, so in any case, I go, I just moved to Miami 6 months prior. I'm going to invite everybody I know in Miami and I'm going to cook dinner for them. So all seven people I know in Miami came over for dinner. they came over for Shabbat dinner and, I cooked for them. The next week did it again because it was awesome. We had all seven people over. Fast forward a few weeks later, I invited 14 people. I'd had people invite people. Then I did 20, then we did 25, then we did 30. Then somehow I send out about 50 invites. I make food for 50. And I cook in my one bedroom apartment overlooking the beach. I cook for 50 people. We have a sit down dinner. I have 29 chairs. Sometimes it's 35, sometimes it's 20. Again, it's Miami. I don't know when people are showing up and if they're showing up, but So I've hosted about 90 dinners for people where I cook. I have you in my house. And until recently, nobody's ever come more than once. Or like my two best friends came more than once. And it was able to, you know, there's something special when somebody cooks for you, especially in these days. Nobody has a home cooked meal. I don't know about down under. And especially in my age demographic. And nobody invites anybody over anymore. So, and then there's something special about me being able to cook for you and being in my house. And just when we do, before we sit down for dinner, I ask everybody, we go around, you have 20 seconds to tell me what you're up to and how somebody could help you. You don't ask for help. You don't ask for money. But ask somebody else about it, right?
Yeah.
And everybody kind of gets to know each other, and then everybody runs and sits down. And by the end of the night, it's really cool. Everybody's like made a best friend, and it's something special. So everybody remembers that, remembers me for putting it together. And I'm usually there to help everybody out. So I've created 2,000 acquaintances that way. And some really, really close friendships. And sometimes I meet people there and I'm like, not a big fan. And then a year later, I'm like, wow, the person's great. And we really connect. And some of my closest friends have come out of that too. So
that is awesome. That is awesome. Yeah.
It's a lot of work. I didn't think it was a lot of work. And then I'm like, wow, this is a lot of work.
Well, I mean, 50 people, one bedroom apartment cooking. I mean, yeah,
it's a big apartment. It's still big.
But sure.
The cooking is easy. The dishes.
Not great. And that's not great. I did not expect that. And that is an awesome story. Yeah. The things that don't scale and the stuff that really returns. That's really cool.
Yeah. You know, but so just one thing, the things that don't scale, we're also focused on scaling. We don't need, you don't need to necessarily worry. Figure out something that works. And so what if it doesn't scale? It still works. And I guarantee we figure something that there's a way of scaling it if it really works that well.
Sage advice. Let's go to the other end of that spectrum, Rob. Like when you see that partnerships are going to break or they're going to shift, what are you looking for in a deal or a relationship where it's like, I'm not sure.
When you say break, I just want to make sure I'm not lost in British English.
So if you get a sense that a partnership is not going well and that based on your experience, it's likely to have to come to an end. Like, what are you looking for? What are the signals you're looking for?
What are the signals for that it's not going to work out anymore? Or what are the warning signs?
Yeah, a bit of both.
Yeah. I mean, the warning signs is probably communication. The warning signs is lack of, like, it's stalling, right? So let's take an enterprise sales cycle or an enterprise partnership. You know, there's going to be a successful one is going to be have KPIs, right? Ultimately, the KPI, like you pointed out, it's like, if we don't win business in 6 months, it's not going to work out. Okay, cool. But there's going to be 2 to 8, probably, let's just call it 4 KPIs along the way. Right? You're making intros, we're getting second calls, things are moving forward, where we have some momentum, like whatever those KPIs are and numbers of those. If we're not meeting any sub KPIs along the way, there's some yellow flags going off.
Yeah.
If what we spoke about is drastically different than what you're delivering, those are yellow flags going off. If I have multiple yellow flags going off, I'm probably looking for other opportunities, right, and other partnerships.